Hi, this is a response of the day for the 14th of Elul. My name is Gideon Rothstein, and I'm going to share with you today two tshuvot on the same topic by Rav Moshe Feinstein about burial in a mausoleum. We start by thanking Rabbi Jack Abramowitz and David Hauchhauser and the OU for giving us an opportunity to share this shiur with you online. The response, or the first of the responses, which is not the one for the 14th of Elul, is Shut Igret Moshe Yeredeya Chivah Gimel Siman Kuf Mem Gimel. So it's the third time Moshe Feinstein visited Yeredeya issues in responsa, the 143rd responsa in that volume, in that section of that volume, and then the one for 14th Elul is the next one in that volume, Kuf Mem Dalet. So this is Chivah Gimel Yeredeya Siman Kuf Mem Gimel Siman Kuf Mem Dalet. I just noticed I've been writing down the where they come from, because David Hauchhauser had a great idea to start putting that online so you can see it, not just have to listen to the tape to know where these responses are from. And yesterday's response for the 13th of Elul was from Igros Moshe Yeredeya Gimel Kuf Lamed Gimel. So usually I'm not that close on consecutive days, but I don't really know to pick them at the same time at all. So it just sort of worked out that way, but it is not in any way evidence of anything that I'm doing about my choices. I'm really trying to, as much as I can, just choose what comes my way. So the first of these two votes, Kuf Mem Gimel, is dated the 17th of Menachem Av of Tavshin Lamed Bet. It's dated which is the middle of the summer of 1972, and he's writing to a Rav Yaakov Muskin, who is an important Rav in Cleveland. They are the members of the Rabbinic Council of Cleveland. And the question is burial in a mausoleum, and it really raises issues, as we're going to see in the Tshuvot, of what happens when two sets of Jews have very different views about how to handle the world. There are Jews who are Shomrei Torah Mitzvos, and there are Jews who are not, and they have to share some kind of communal resource. In this case, it's going to be a cemetery. So if one set of Jews, let's call them Reform Jews, or let's call them unaffiliated Jews, decide that they don't have a problem with burial in a mausoleum, and they're going to think to themselves, and they'll say out loud, what's your business? Yes, it's a communal cemetery. You do what you want in your plot. I'm not requiring you to bury it all in a mausoleum in your plot. I think burial in the ground is terrible. You should bury it in a mausoleum, but I'm not forcing myself on you. And the other side, the Jewish, the Shomrei Torah Mitzvot side, is not quite as comfortable with that. So the first question and the first response mostly deals with the question of, is it unallowed? Is it okay? Either way, is it okay or is it prohibited or neutral to bury in a mausoleum? And that the first of the tshuvot mostly focused on the fact that burial in a mausoleum generally involved finding a way to embalm the body, because part of what you wanted in a mausoleum was the ability to sort of see or revisit the body. So you were trying to embalm it to stop the decay process. So Rav Moshe Feinstein is going to respond mostly to that. He says to build a mausoleum, to leave bodies there, is a very great thing, because we need to be tzarich likvor dafka bakarka. We have Gemara in Sanhedrin, involvement in Bet, says you have to bury him in the ground, and the source is the pasuk has to do with people who were put to death by a beit din, and then sometimes they were hanged on a tree, and the Torah says you can't leave the body hanging overnight, ki kavor tikberen, lo talin ne relato alav, you can't let the body be on the tree, hanging out there, visible to everybody overnight, ki kavor tikberenu. More Sanhedrin of Omen Bet understands the doubling of the verb of burial is to tell you it's not enough to put him in a wooden box. That's a burial of sorts, because the deceased is out of the way. Nobody can see the deceased, and it's in the box. So kavort tikperen would tell you that it has to go in the ground. Now, we're going to talk about in the ground a little bit in the course of this tshuva. It doesn't necessarily mean in the ground in the intuitive way that we would think of it, but that's what it, but a mausoleum, at least in this tshuva, seems to be clearly not in the ground. The Torah and the Shulchan Aruch passing that way in Shin Samach Bet Yeredeya, that if you just leave a relative who was deceased in an aron, in some kind of a coffin, could be wood, could be metal, you know, you could tell me, well, it's a metal coffin, nothing will ever get out, it's hermetically sealed. So the answer is, if you don't put it in the ground, you're violating the prohibition of, the person who does it is violating the prohibition of malin etameh, of leaving a deceased person overnight when they're not allowed to. The Rambam Hilchos Eva on the Laws of Mourning also writes, v'chofrin ba'afar me'arot. Here's a case we're going to see where it's not necessarily underground, because they used to also bury by digging caves into a hill or into something. But you were digging it into the ground. It's just not the ground that's beneath our feet. It's the ground to the side. But you make a kind of a burial chamber in the side of a cave, and you put the body in there, and then you cover it over with the dirt that you took out, or with stones, that also counts halachically as burial in the ground. So in the ground is not a question of down. It's a question of the ground or the earth and the nature that you dig out a place for that person. You return them to that element of nature. And the Rambam does write, you're supposed to use a wooden coffin, but what he means is that you put the, like we do, you put the person in the coffin, and the coffin in the burial spot, we would do it in the ground. He would have said you can do it in a cave, but it's certainly in the ground, the cave overall. And the truth is that's somewhat of a debate, which Feinstein suggests in Shulchan Aruch, or between Rishonim, in whether it's better to have a coffin or not better to have a coffin. There are those who hold that it's better not to have a coffin because then the burial is directly in the ground. Some people think that's only in Eretz Yisrael. The end, the last words in the Pasuk of Ha'az, in the Shira of Ha'azinu. This is me talking. He doesn't mention this, but I'm pretty sure this is the background to what Moshe Feinstein is talking about. I don't think I'm making a claim here. That's, I'm just throwing in, I think this is knowledge that he's taking for granted, that the last words of the Shira of Ha'azinu, of the Song of Ha'azinu, which Jews are really supposed to know very well, is V'chiper admato amo, that the land will provide kapara for Hashem's nation. So it seems that clearly that's true in Eretz Yisrael, and that's why in Eretz Yisrael the custom is to bury directly in the ground, not in coffins. And there are those who held that it was true even outside of Eretz Yisrael. There are Hasidim, I'm pretty sure, who when they bury in coffins, but then they, as the person is put in the ground, they remove they have a removable bottom coffin. So the body is lying directly on the ground, and that would apply even outside of Eretz Yisrael. Whereas the Rambam seems to think that an Aron Shel Eitz, a wooden coffin, is fine. I think it might be the Rambam would tell you that the wooden coffin will eventually decay as well or be eaten away. But in any case, and the Rambam might think that that qualifies as being on the ground itself. But clearly, Rav Moshe Feinstein says everybody agrees, however you define in the ground, the burial has to be in the ground. There's another prohibition now, he says, of preventing the ikul habasar, the decay of the body. And that's because, before we go on, I want to point out, this will be an example of a case. I think there are many, many examples, but this is not my soapbox to talk about these things. But this is going to be an example where Jewish beliefs about issues that don't seem to have any real halakhic meaning or importance nonetheless affect our halakhic understanding. And that, therefore, the people who try as much as they can to separate belief from halakhic practice, because there are Jews out there who like very much to be connected to halachic Judaism, as they understand it, to what they call halachic Judaism. They want to be part of that. They don't want to leave that community, but they also are unwilling to commit to many of the faith ideas and principles within that community, and they think they can bifurcate the two. I don't believe in X, Y, or Z, but I keep halacha. So this is going to be, I think there are many examples, but this is an example where halacha actually requires us to take a position on a certain, is based on a certain belief. And so if you say, well, I'm going to follow halacha, but I don't believe the belief, you're not really following the halacha, because the halacha is about the belief. So here's an example of that, because Moshe Feinstein points out that the halacha seems clearly to assume that the person who passed away receives kapara, receives absolution, receives atonement for their sins from the pain of the process of decay. So to the extent that, well, not to the extent that, Judaism clearly believes in an immortal soul, or almost immortal, or generally immortal soul, residing within a body, and they're connected to each other, and they together constitute the person. Death is a separation of the soul from the body. Some might think that means that the soul leaves the body, has no relation to the body whatsoever. It's, to me, clearly not true in other ways. So, for example, I think that it's fairly clear that there are many, many Jewish traditions that assume that the deceased are in some way closer to their grave sites than other places in the world. However that works, not our topic, but I think there are enough sources to say that to tell you that it's not true that we think the Judaism has the thought that the souls just leave their bodies and forget it. Here's another example. The Gemara is very clear that the soul receives, a person receives atonement from the process of decay of the body. Now, if the body was not connected to the soul anymore, it's just now the connection has been sundered and they're nothing connected to each other, then that would make no sense. So the answer is no. We think that the process of decay, Moshe Feinstein is pointing out, the process of decay provides an atonement. And it's said in the Ramban Yeridin Zamar Gimel, who wrote, you can also pour limestone on the body, so the body should decay quickly. Now, in that case, what's going on there is that you want to move that body. There are times when, not on topic today, so I'm not getting into it, but there are times when it's acceptable to exhume a body and move it, meaning you'll have to bury it for whatever reason. You have to bury it because we don't leave bodies just lying around, but you really want to move it. Maybe you want to move to Eretz Yisrael. Maybe the person sadly passed away far from their family burial plot. There are reasons why we're allowed to move bodies. So if you want to move a body, and you're not going to be, and moving a body that's still a full body is very difficult and sometimes maybe impossible. So if you're going to wait for the decay process, because then you're just moving, and it's sad to say, but you're just moving some bones, which are much lighter. So the Ramah says it's also acceptable to hurry that process along, to apply chemicals that will make the decay go faster. But notice that the decay is nonetheless necessary. It's not like you're allowed to avoid the decay completely. The Taz right now, I said there that might be for technical reasons, but the Rosh Feist is taking it to be that no, it's because we want the decay to happen, and the Taz writes there that there's a pasuk that says, "Bisaro alav yichav," that as long as the body is feeling pain, and that would be the pain of decay, then the soul is being judged. There's a judging going on, and the soul is feeling that, or the person is feeling that, and therefore it's relevant to that person. And therefore, it's a process you're not supposed to stop from happening, because as long as it hasn't happened yet, we think that the judgment, or these sources think the judgment continues, and therefore to leave a person in continuing judgment is not a situation that's nice or that's appropriate to a way of handling and treating the deceased. Now, it is true, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that the Gemara Matzah Hedrim Mem Zayin Amud Bet sounds like Rav Ashi thinks that as soon as the body is buried and feels the pain of burial, and notice that the assumption of the Gemara is that certainly when the body is being put in the ground, it feels it. Now it is the deceased. So I guess I would think the consciousness would have left, stayed with the soul. So if you're going to believe that, then you're saying that the soul still has enough of a connection to the body that the pain of burial affects the soul, and that provides kapara. So that's a problem for Rav Moshe Feinstein, because he's just said he thinks you need the whole process of decay to get the kapara. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says he thinks that Rav Ashi is talking about haruge beitin. He's talking about criminals who whatever their crime was, did it so fully that a court felt the need or felt the ability or went through all the process, that's a whole discussion of its own, to put them to death. So they've already been put to death for their sin. So you might have thought that was the kapara. So Rav Ashi is saying, well, the kapara, the atonement, doesn't complete until they be put into the ground, into the kever. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says, if you look there in the Gemara, you'll see that that's what the discussion is, because the comparison there is between haruge beitin, people put to death by the court. Now, put to death by the court means they did something terrible enough to be put to death by the court. There's another category of people put to death by the malchut, by the foreign government. And in the time of the Gemara, the being put to death by the malchut, by the foreign government, was assumed to be for no justifiable reason. So in that case, the assumption is that the death itself is a kapara for all of the person's sins. They're putting death for nothing they did wrong. Therefore, death itself is the kapara. Okay? Because of the avla, because of the criminality of it, the wrongfulness of it, that provides the atonement. In the case of people put to death for their sins, they're still put to death by a court, their lives are being cut short, that's providing much of the kapara. But Rav Ashi is saying, so that person, when they start being buried, that'll complete their kapara, that'll complete their atonement. So it'll be the pain of being put to death before their time. Being put to death in a painful way is an atonement for the sin, for that sin perhaps. And then burial is more of an atonement. As opposed to, now we're coming back to our case, in a regular mate, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, in a regular person who passed away, you know, of an illness, let's say, or whatever it was, so it might be that the death provided some kapara. Let's say the person passed away at an old age of a gentle disease, and they had a great life, right, and then nothing about their death was so painful. So Rav Moshe Feinstein thinks that Rav Ashi would agree that the ikul basar, the decay, that provides the kapara, provides the atonement. It happens to be in the Parish of Mishnah to the Rambam, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein's reading, even haruge beitin, even those put death by a court, don't get their full kapara until she eat akel habasar. In fact, Rav Ashi spoke about burial, didn't mean the beginning of burial, just the being put in the ground. It meant the decay process as well. So Rav Moshe Feinstein's reading is that when it comes to regular people who have passed away, who are not put to death anyway, there clearly the ikul basar is important. The kapara, the atonement, depends in a lot of ways on the decay. And therefore, if you put somebody in a mausoleum in such a way that they're embalmed and that the temperature is kept such that they won't decay, or that the decay is very long delayed, So it's not a favor to them. It's actually, in this reading of it, it's actually mistreatment of them, because we are, A, denying them the atonement, and B, extending the process of judgment they're going through in all of these ways. So just to add to the faith issues that come into play in very practical issues that we're talking about, in very practical questions of dealing with it here, you might think to yourself, as Rav Moshe Feinstein did, well, if we're allowed to pour limestone or I think it's limestone, but if we're allowed to pour a decaying agent on bodies in a situation where moving them is difficult, right? Nowadays, we move bodies, let's say, to Eretz Yisrael for burial, and we just move the body itself. Not only do we move the body itself, we move it in a coffin with dry ice packed around it so it won't decay while it's being moved, because we don't want smelling to happen. There we allow ourselves to delay the decay, apparently, right? We allow ourselves to delay the decay, but that's only because we're going to bury them very, very quickly. So why wouldn't we just do the other way? If there are more things that you can pour limestone, and that, in fact, hastens the sense of judgment, also hastens the sense of atonement, then let's do that. That should be a favor. And why don't we always do that before burial? Why don't Chevra Kedishas, instead of preparing the body for burial, doing all these great things they do and putting on all the great work that they pray, let's just pour limestone on all people who pass away, put the body into a coffin, put the remaining bones in a coffin or in a bag or whatever you put it into, and bury it. And that'll be nicer, is the question, right? That'll be nicer, because we will have hastened the judgment, but also hastened the atonement, so that by the time we stop our involvement with the person, we can feel in this line of reason that we're going to reject in just a second, we can feel as if we've done this huge favor. We've brought their lives and their judgments to a conclusion, to an end. So Moshe Feinstein points out, and even though you're allowed to do that, what you're allowed to do, this is a piece of the Tshuva has it also, you're allowed to do it if you want to move the body, right? Those are the situations the Ramah talked about. You want to move the body, you can't move the body without the decay, then you're allowed to do that. But, ein la'asot, in other cases, ein la'asot hitchakmut neged pe'ulutav shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Such an important line, and one that requires balance with other things. We're not supposed to try to think that we're smarter than Hashem, and if Hashem's created a certain way for the world to work, we're not supposed to, in general, just go against that. Now, obviously, that's not true everywhere. So, for example, the Gemara understands that there's a pasuk that tells us that doctors are supposed to do their best to heal people. But notice, the Gemara looked for a pasuk to tell itself. Otherwise, the Gemara could have imagined saying, doctors shouldn't heal people, because if Hashem wants people to get sick, Hashem wants them to get sick. Hashem wants them to be healed, they'll be healed. So it happens to be the Jewish tradition understood Pesukim in the Torah. They tell us, no, it's not true. You're supposed to be healing people. So it's a balance here. I think Rav Moshe Feinstein is at least saying it in the case where we're dealing with these metaphysical issues of Hashem judging people and atoning for their sins and things like that. So there, we are not supposed to think we know so much about it, because we don't know so much about it, and therefore we're not supposed to try to fight against the way that Hashem set up the world was. People pass away, they get buried, the body decays, and all throughout that process, in some ways, there's atonement and judging going on. It happens to be halakhically, you want to move a body. If you have the halakhic right to move a body for burial, because burial wherever the new place is better for the person, you're allowed to do that. And then if you want to hasten the decay to foster that, then you're allowed to do that. So those are all halakhic discussions, but they're not because we're saying to ourselves, and I want to try to circumvent Hashem's judgment in that way. All of which leads to the conclusion that preventing decay is in general a bad thing, because we're stopping the judgment and we're causing extended pain and suffering to the deceased, and therefore we're not supposed to do it. That's in fact, the Rosh Feinstein just points out, the Shach says, that's in fact the reason why we in general don't move people who have passed away. Don't move bodies from one cemetery to the other. Let's say a family is living in They're living in Seattle, Washington, the name that came to mind, and then they have to move as a family to Houston, Texas for whatever reason. And they want to take their deceased loved ones with them because they want to be able to visit them, and they think, it's a mitzvah to visit your deceased loved ones. We don't do such things. We don't move bodies. There's a very restricted list of reasons we move bodies, and that comes up in halakha, actually. We've spoken about it in these shiurim, about the question of moving the body of Moses Montefiore to Eretz Yisrael and other people to Eretz Yisrael. So Eretz Yisrael is an exception to the rule. We often do move bodies to Eretz Yisrael. But when it comes to moving bodies, so then there's a very narrow list of cases. If the person who passed away said they wanted it before they passed away, that could be a reason. If there's a family burial plot already created somewhere else, that could be a reason. And Eretz Yisrael could be a reason. So there are reasons, but there are not infinite reasons. So how come? What's wrong with moving a body? So the Shach says our tradition is that when you open a grave, that in some way tells the person who passed away they're being called for judgment. So you see what I mean? They were judged when they passed away, but there's another later judgment coming on. And for whatever reason it is, the opening of a grave signals the person who passed away that they're being judged, and that causes them some worry, some concern, and we're not allowed to do that. So much like this, so if the Shach says you're not allowed to do that, you're not allowed to make them more worried about judgment and bring up the issue of judgment when it shouldn't, making sure, doing our best to avoid decay, which will extend the period of judgment with them and will extend the period of punishment for them, so that's clearly, obviously true that you're not allowed to do that. And that's the kind of a sin, so Moshe Feinstein, this is a broad idea to remember, that's kind of a sin that you can't really do tshuva for, because before Hashem would forgive you for it, you'd have to find a way to get the person you injured to forgive you for it. But the person you injured is now deceased, so there's no way to ask them for mechila. You know how the same way we walk around before Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur asking forgiveness for people, if they're not alive anymore, then we have a real problem. So the halacha there is, you go to their gravesite, you ask, but it's a very complicated thing. So here, Rosh Feinstein says, it's really a very big deal. To bury in a mausoleum and to prevent the decay of the body are very big problems. They cause pain and suffering to the deceased, and it's very hard to do tshuva for it because we've caught it. Now, that being true, that's all about so far about the mausoleum. Rosh Feinstein, right at the very end, throws in the surprise twist, which is the question wasn't only about whether you could bury in a mausoleum, it was whether you can bury, when you can allow yourself to be buried in a cemetery where there is a mausoleum. Rosh Feinstein says, no, you shouldn't. And the reason you shouldn't is because that's a place where they're mivazim metim. It's clear that the people in that cemetery don't care about how we treat the deceased because of all these understandings. Remember, Moshe Feinstein is feeling very comfortable here saying that even though they don't see the world the same way as I see the world, and they think they're doing it out of the honor for the person, but we know that they're actually causing pain and suffering to the deceased, and we're confident they're actually mistreating the deceased, and therefore we're not allowed to bury with those kinds of people. And Moshe Feinstein points out that halakhically, we try to bury Sifrei Torah that need to be buried because they're no longer usable, or other books need to be buried. We try to bury them near righteous people. And it shows that being buried near righteous people is an important thing. If we're buried near people, righteous things is an important thing, then being buried near evildoers and sinners. And here, the reason they're sinners, remember, is they leave their deceased in mausoleums and they embalm them and do other things to avoid decay. Rufin says that's the exact opposite of being buried near righteous people. So the first response was about burial in a mausoleum. He was trying to point out how it's us or why it's us or what are the reasons for its prohibition. Closing with the idea that not only shouldn't we bury in a mausoleum, but it's his feeling that if your cemetery that you're in buries people in a mausoleum, that too is a huge problem, because then that defines those people as sinners and evildoers, even though Rav Moshe Feinstein is not saying they know what they're doing is wrong. They probably don't know what they're doing is wrong. And yet, Rav Moshe Feinstein, in this response in 1972, is comfortable saying whether or not they know what they're doing is wrong, they're doing something terribly wrong, and being buried near them would be a problem. That's the response as of the 17th of Menachem Av, right after Tisha B'Av, a time when people like to talk about unity, and we should find a way to unity, saying this is not the kind of unity you can have. Interesting perspective on that. And then a couple of months later, 14th of Elul, not even a couple of months later, right? Less than a month later, the next response, should Igor Moshe Yeradeh Gimel Kuf Mem Dalet, response number 144, is more about this. 14th of Elul, Tosh Tin Lamed Bet, 1972. Now the question is, the fact that they tried to stop, so apparently the Rabbinical Council of Cleveland that got this tshuva from Moshe Feinstein had tried to stand up against the mausoleum people, say, no, you can't have mausoleums in our cemetery, and it's going to court now. The mausoleum, the people who want to build mausoleums are taking them to court. They want the right to build a mausoleum. They're unfortunately not going to abate into a rabbinical court. They're going to Erchal. They're going to a non-Jewish court, and it's not clear what the non-Jewish court is going to say. So some people are trying to create some kind of a compromise. Question is, so Moshe Feinstein says it's very good to have a compromise. Why is it very good to have a compromise? It makes a point about American justice that I think people don't notice. There are many, many cases in American law where you go before a judge and that judge decides the law. Now, so that you can appeal it, you can say you got it wrong, but if you didn't get it obviously wrong, you're stuck with whatever the interpretation of the law was of that one judge. One person gets to decide. That's not true in halacha, right? In halacha, you always have three, and in more serious cases, you have more, you have 23. Before court would apply any kind of a serious punishment to a person, a non-monetary punishment, basically, to a person, it would be, they would do it, so a compromise would be the best, but the compromise that's being suggested is raises questions, because the suggestion was that the current Jewish cemetery, which was, it seems like, controlled by the Orthodox or by those who care about halakha, would sell the part of the cemetery that had built the mausoleum. So the mausoleum was already built. I think they were trying to get it taken down. They would sell that part to the people who had, you know, the people who had built the mausoleum, and that section of the world, that section of the Jewish community, could bury in that part of the cemetery where they built mausoleums, and they would make a wall between the two cemeteries. It would be separate cemeteries. So the first question they had was, can you sell a cemetery? Because after all, the Muslim people clearly don't care very much, but no matter what you do, however you draw the boundaries of the cemetery, you're going to include there people who were buried in the ground and thought they were being buried in a kadosh kind of a place, in a sanctified, proper Jewish burial, and where they weren't going to act in this way. So can you, after the fact, sort of doom them to being part of this new cemetery where there is now a mausoleum, and you've got to presume there's going to be further mausoleums in the future? So Moshe Feinstein relates this to the question of how we can act in a cemetery where there are lots of act bekalos rosh in an undignified way. So I won't get into that whole discussion, but he points out, and here's where the first time we see that he clearly recognizes that the people who are putting up the mausoleum, they think they're treating their deceased with proper respect. They think of it as more respect, actually. That's important not because they're right. It's important because it means that it doesn't qualify as treating it bekalut rosh. Kalut rosh, Moshe Feinstein is understanding it to mean, is where you know you're acting in a lighthearted way, in an inappropriate way. But if you think it's an appropriate way, it may not be okay, but it's not that. And therefore, also, the people who are already buried there, right? So they're already buried there. And therefore, the fact that the cemetery changes isn't seen as a mistreatment of them or a kalus rosh of them, and therefore he thinks it's not a problem. Another issue that comes up is, isn't this a lifnei iver issue? So lifnei iver is an important halakha concept people have lost sight of, which is that not only can't we sin, we can't lead others to sin, we can't mislead others to sin, and we can't help others to sin. So by selling them the land and giving them the rights over the land, aren't the Jews of Cleveland in some way fostering, right, making possible? Meaning, let's say they could go to court and they thought they might be able to win. They don't know. But if they were to win in court, then they could stop lots and lots of Jews of building mausoleums. Now, it's not even necessarily true. It might be they would have bought another cemetery and done it there. But theoretically, that would have changed the halakhic calculus there. But theoretically here, by holding on, they could be stopping them from sinning, and aren't they required to continue stopping them? So Moshe Feinstein says, no, I don't think so. Not because that's not true. That is true. But there's a concept called lifnei de lifnei. The question is how directly the person is sinning. When you let somebody have a piece of karka, a piece of land, for burial, that doesn't mean they're going to then necessarily bury the mausoleum, and therefore it's a lifnei de lifnei. I'm not giving him the mausoleum to bury in. I'm giving the person we're ceding the land to them to do what they want, to bury as they think it was, and therefore he thinks that buying a place for a mausoleum or setting aside a place that they might eventually be a mausoleum is not itself an act of sin, because they can change their minds, they can bury in the proper way. It's a step removed. And that step removed is important for us halakhically, because if we define something or come to believe that something is what's called lifnei de lifnei, is a two-step process that we're allowing for, that's not something we're halakhically required to stop doing. Now, if you said to me, no, I think I can convince him to stay with us and not to keep it, not to have mausoleums and not have fights about it, so then you could say, well, it's better to do that. It's better to help Jews not sin if you can. But the question is, do we fall under the halakhic requirement of not joining in a sin? And I think a lot of people today forget that there is a halakhic requirement in some situations to not join in a sin. And that's a helpful reminder here from Moshe Feinstein about this question. In this instance, he thinks you're allowed to do it because it's this compromise. And in the compromise, when you're ceding the land, it's lifnei de lifnei. You're not giving them mausoleums to bury in. You're giving them land which they can choose, and we can hope they won't choose, but they can choose to bury in mausoleums. Not only that, but here, finally, Moshe Feinstein says he thinks also that actually a mausoleum, since it's a building with stones and bricks and cement, and it's connected to the ground, it's not like a tent, it's like firmly in the ground, leaving a body in, burying a body in a mausoleum like that. He's not talking about the embalming process. He's not talking about avoiding decay anymore. He's talking about if I take a coffin and I put it into a building like that, Rav Moshe Feinstein says he thinks it might be that at a d'oraita level, at least according to some opinions, there's Rashi and Sanhedrin, they seem to think so, that if that at a d'oraita level, at a Torah level, that might qualify as burial on the ground. Not that it's allowed. It's certainly prohibited at a rabbinic level, and there are Rishonim who think that it's not burial on the ground. But since there are Rishonim who think that it's burial on the ground, and therefore they're not violating a Torah level, a Torah prohibition, so then the lift the Iver changes, because those who hold that if it's not a Torah prohibition, then lift the Iver is not a Torah obligation either. That's a question of its own. Somebody's about to violate a derabbanan, a rabbinic prohibition, a rabbinic issue, is if I help them, is that lifting either at a Torah level, is that if they're at a rabbinic level? That's a hard question that people will have different opinions on. So here, if we can understand, if it's true that burial in the mausoleum, since it's burial in a building of brick and cement that is tied to the ground, then it becomes like the ground to some extent, and therefore it is to some extent a burial in the ground. Now, that's not a complete head there, but Rosh Hashanah says it may fall down one day, maybe they'll deconstruct it, they'll take it down one day. So there's all sorts of reasons why he thinks it might be not terrible as he had, as terrible as he put it in the first tshuva, not that we're allowed to allow it or think good of it, but also remember that part of the intent of these buildings is that the body shouldn't decay, and that's clearly not allowed, that's clearly against the Jewish custom. But in terms of lifting Iver, in terms of us seeing the lens, they can do that. So then he thinks that we're allowed to, that's not a problem. And the problem of, I'm sorry, he says the problem of the preventing of decay, he says, is Devar Isra Bizayin LaMeitim. It's two ways. First, Shemarim Geut Al Shara Meitim, that's a mausoleum, is a problem because they want to be more than the other deceased. But part of the point of death is to realize how we're all equalized by death. And then you find people put these huge gravestones, and worse than that, huge mausoleums. It's trying to show we're better than you. So that's a problem, Moshe Feinstein says. And also it shows that people think to themselves, what I want for my death or for my deceased relative is what should count, not whatever the Torah says. And that, Moshe Feinstein says, is itself a problem. And I think that's a very broad problem. The question of who judges what's right and wrong and what's good and bad and all those kinds of things. But since at a Torah level, it does seem to qualify as burial, as long as the building is standing and it's within the walls of the building such that it's out of the way and all those kinds of things. So he thinks it's a lifnei iver, is going to be a derabban lifnei iver, and therefore, according to some opinions, and therefore you can rely that it's really not a lifnei iver, it's a lifnei delifnei, it's a two-step lifnei. But that's all only because you have to worry about how this judge is going to decide. Because you have to worry, the judge won't care about Jewish values and these kinds of things, and therefore you might go to court, you might lose completely, and it'll be even worse, and therefore that's why he thinks you should do it. Now, when it comes to entryways, if you're making a new cemetery, the question is, well, could we use the same entryway? And some people were going to the mausoleum, some people were going to our way. So Moshe says, no, he thinks when you're going to separate, you have to separate completely, you have to make a new entryway, either if the existing entryway is the mausoleum side, then you have to make a new entryway to your cemetery. Or the other way around, they have to make a new entryway to their mausoleum because you want to be a complete separation as part of this pshara, because sometimes, unfortunately, separation is the way to go. So that is for the 14th of Elul response of a day about issues of burial in a mausoleum, which is also issues of how Jews can and cannot cooperate with each other and when separation is, at least from Moshe Feinstein's opinion, the only way to go. A very sad occasion, a very sad circumstance coming out of dealing with our deceased, which is another sad circumstance, kind of a sad response of a day for the 14th of Elul. Other than that, though, I hope this has been all the sadness in your day, and you have a great day. Have a great day.